The FAA sets a deadline for U.S. aircraft to equip for ADS-B. Seattle Avionics crams still more power into its Voyager software. And the FAA rejects a former Boeing engineer's criticism of the Dreamliner. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, October 3rd, 2007. On Tuesday, the Federal Aviation Administration proposed all aircraft flying in controlled airspace in the U.S. be required to have satellite-based avionics by 2020, effectively implementing automatic dependent surveillance broadcast for air traffic control. The FAA says ADS-B is 10 times more accurate than current radar technology. Aircraft not flying in controlled airspace will not be required to have ADS-B avionics, but may do so voluntarily to realize the safety benefits. The FAA says the accuracy of satellite signals will allow controllers to reduce separation standards between aircraft, significantly increasing the number of aircraft that can be safely managed. The technology also gives pilots real-time traffic, terrain, and weather info in the cockpit. In an early ADS-B trial, which was the Capstone program in Southwest Alaska, the fatal accident rate for ADS-B-equipped aircraft dropped by 47%, according to the FAA. The proposed rule is open to public comment for 90 days and is scheduled to become final by late 2009. The proposed compliance date of 2020 will give the industry more than 10 years to properly equip aircraft for ADS-B operation. Seattle Avionics will be demonstrating its latest version of the Voyager flight software system, version 4.0, at AOPA Expo starting tomorrow. 4.0 features a completely rewritten charting engine based on the same DirectX technology that Google Earth and Microsoft Flight Simulator use. Voyager's all-new charting engine is effectively real-time, capable of updating the screen more than 50 times a second if your hardware will run that fast. That allows for smooth, real-time zooms and pans in what the company claims is a first for general aviation software. Voyager 4.0 seamlessly merges all sectionals and IFR charts, so pilots need not select particular charts to display. They just pick the type of chart to display and Voyager does the rest. 4.0 also incorporates a new color scheme that works well in both daylight and night flights, and the more than 50 enhancements included in the recently released version 3.6. Pilots can get a personal demo of new Voyager 4.0 at AOPA Expo, booth 214. The company always offers self-running demos, free live demo webinars, and a free version of Voyager called Free Flight. Veteran TV anchor Dan Rather, who made a premature, ungraceful exit from CBS News after a scandal involving falsified documents regarding President Bush's military record, has managed to step in it again. A few days ago, Rather used his cable TV investigative program, which now airs on a channel called HDNet, to allow former Boeing senior engineer Vince Weldon to tell his viewers that Boeing's new composite 787 Dreamliner is unsafe and insist that the FAA should be administering safety testing, not just supervising Boeing's own tests. The FAA's response was published in the Federal Register last week. Quote, "We consider it more effective to establish the standards and encourage Boeing to develop the most effective method of compliance," unquote. Weldon's account of the reason for his separation from Boeing does not square with that of the company. It's not clear who lost more credibility through this association, Rather or Weldon. Flight testing of the Dreamliner is behind schedule, but barring further delays, the first 787 is scheduled to enter service with All Nippon Airways in May of next year. The past 7 days have seen three rulings placing responsibility for fatal aircraft accidents, at least partly, on the shoulders of air traffic controllers and the FAA. Now, an attorney is suing the FAA for the loss of three lives in a 2004 accident near Pikeville, Kentucky, claiming the actions of an air traffic controller were to blame. The National Transportation Safety Board reported that the Beechcraft A-36, carrying three persons, impacted terrain while on approach to land at Pikeville Airport October 7, 2005, in low IFR conditions. The aircraft went down about a mile from the runway to the left of the approach course for runway 27. Witnesses on the ground reported ceilings of 200 to 300 feet above ground at the time of the accident, right at decision height for the approach. Lost in the accident were pilot Herman Lester, his wife Julie, and their son Max. The NTSB ruled poor weather conditions and pilot error were probable causes, but attorney Mike DeBourbon, who's also the airport board chairman, says the air traffic controller handling the beach's approach brought the plane in too close to the field for a safe precision approach. He's suing the FAA for $10 million and says if he wins, the money will go to the family's living relatives. FAA officials declined comment on pending litigation. As ANN reported, last week the NTSB ruled that the controller handling Scott Crossfield's April 2006 fatal accident flight failed to provide the famed aviator with timely weather information before he flew into an active thunderstorm cell in northeast Georgia. The board issued a similar ruling earlier this week on the 2005 crash of a Cessna P-337 in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Last Friday, a judge ruled Chicago radio personality Bob Collins was only 5% at fault for a 2000 mid-air accident in the pattern at Waukegan Airport, leveling the rest of the blame at the FAA and an air traffic controller. Up next on ANN, Columbia owners will at least have support for their Garmin avionics. NORAD tells the Russians, at least file a flight plan. And scientists at NASA went around in their fight against invasive background checks. You're listening to AeroNews.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 3rd, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. As the bankruptcy saga of Columbia Aircraft plays out, existing Columbia aircraft owners will have plenty of questions. At least one of them has been answered by Garmin Electronics, which sent a letter to customers flying Columbia aircraft to let them know that service will be available under their factory warranties. With close to 1,000 facilities around the world, Garmin notes that a shop is likely to be nearby. The avionics maker is quick to point out that the warranty applies only to Garmin equipment, however, noting, quote, wiring, switches, and third-party equipment are not covered by Garmin, but remain the responsibility of Columbia or potentially a purchaser of Columbia if such purchaser assumes Columbia's warranty and or their other device manufacturers, unquote. At this point, that still qualifies as good news. ANN will keep you posted. The recent step-up by the Russian Air Force in flights by Cold War-era Tupolev bombers near the borders of U.S. and Canadian airspace has so far resulted only in some excess stomach acid on the NATO side. Still, scrambling fighters to intercept the bears is expensive, especially when tanker aircraft must also be set up. On Monday, NORAD's General Gene Renwart called on Russia to file flight plans for these missions with NORAD, so officials there at least know the incoming aircraft are not hostile. Renwart says that so far, flight crews on both sides of the confrontations have acted professionally. He even seemed to acknowledge a valid purpose for the flights. Quote, their air crews need training just like our air crews need training. And so the fact that they're increasing training is not an alarming thing for me. Unquote. The Associated Press reports that workers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratories have won a partial victory in their fight against stepped-up background checks. A federal judge said Monday that he'd temporarily bar NASA from asking workers at JPL in Pasadena whether they had ever used drugs. The drug use question was one of several issues in a lawsuit filed by 28 scientists, engineers, and staff at the facility. U.S. District Court Judge Otis Wright said he wanted to balance workers' rights with national security. He indicated he'll rule after an October 19th hearing on whether to grant a broader injunction preventing NASA from asking other personal questions. The case stems from an executive order signed by President Bush in 2004, requiring all government agencies to issue new ID badges to millions of civil servants and contractors to get access to federal buildings and computers. To obtain the badges, workers must be fingerprinted, provide detailed personal information, and sign a waiver allowing open-ended investigations. Any who decline will be considered to have voluntarily resigned their positions. The scientists are technically employees of the California Institute of Technology, which manages JPL for NASA under a federal contract. Caltech is also named in the lawsuit. It's taken a few days to get through the language barrier, but ANN has now confirmed that a special-purpose Diamond DA-42 twin-engine aircraft went down in Romania last Wednesday. It's the first known fatal accident involving Diamond's diesel twin, but mechanical failure is not the early suspect. The aircraft was found in a box canyon. The DA-42 MPP is a special-purpose plane owned by Diamond and used as a camera, sensor, and observation platform. It features a number of modifications to the basic DA-42 design. The aircraft went down September 26th and all three people on board died. The two Austrians and one Romanian were demonstrating low-level survey operations in Romania's Carpathian Mountains. There are no initial reports of mechanical malfunction and no emergency communications were reported prior to that accident. We'll have more details when they become available. Still ahead, a controller clears a takeoff from a closed runway at Dulles. NASA picks the crew of STS-126, and Embraer delivers its first ERJ-145. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, October 3rd, 2007. I'm Paul Plack. We told you yesterday about the FAA's decision to change its definition of runway incursion. International rules define a runway incursion as any unauthorized runway encroachment, whether or not it creates a collision risk. The FAA said Monday it was adopting that definition so that international statistics would be apples to apples. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating one such encroachment. The board reports that on September 12th, about 3:13 a.m. Eastern Time, the Dulles Tower controller cleared a Learjet 35 for takeoff from runway 19 right. Earlier in the evening, that runway had been closed for surveying, and the runway lights were off. There were no injuries or damage to the aircraft reported. At the time of the incident, there was one tower controller in the cab. The second controller assigned to the shift was on break. The FAA has classified the incident as an operational error. NASA tells ANN it has assigned the Space Shuttle crew for the Shuttle Endeavour's STS-126 mission, targeted for launch in September 2008. The flight will deliver equipment to the International Space Station that will enable larger crews to stay there. Veteran Space Flyer Navy Captain Christopher J. Ferguson will command Endeavour. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Eric A. Bowe will serve as the pilot. The mission specialists are Navy Commander Stephen G. Bowen, NASA astronaut Joan E. Higginbotham, Army Lieutenant Colonel Robert S. Kimbrough, and Navy Captain Heide Marie M. Stefanishin-Piper. Bowen, and Kimbrough will be making their first space flights. STS-126 will be the second flight for Ferguson and Stefanishin-Piper, who flew together on STS-115 in September of 2006. It's also the second flight for Higginbotham, who flew on STS-116 in December 2006. Resume details for each member of the crew are available in more detail in the print version of this story on our website at aero-news.net. Brazilian plane maker Embraer recently celebrated the delivery of its 1,000th ERJ-145. The milestone aircraft was manufactured by Harbin Embraer Aircraft Industry Company Limited in Harbin City, China, and was delivered to Hainan Airlines subsidiary Grand China Express. HEAI is a joint venture between Embraer and China's AVIC-2. Hainan placed an order for 50 ERJ-145s and 50 Embraer 190s in August of 2006. The deal called for the ERJ-145s to be built in China while the E-190s are assembled in Brazil. Chen Fang, chairman of HNA Group, says the airline's purchase is a deliberate move to support the development of a national aircraft manufacturing industry in China by allowing Chinese workers to hone their plane-making skills while assembling an established airframe. The move also addresses the country's growing need for regional aircraft. After the delivery ceremony, the ERJ-145 flew directly to Tianjin City, where Grand China Express is based. Embraer says passenger flights will begin immediately. And finally, Airbus is planning to make a low pass over Wichita Mid-Continent Airport in Kansas in the A380 Super Jumbo airliner this Thursday. The Wichita Airport Authority is hosting a media event for reporters to see the plane pass over. The Wichita Business Journal quotes officials at Airbus as saying the flight is a salute to the long tradition of aircraft design and manufacturing in the city, including the contributions by Airbus engineers based in Wichita to the A380. They were in charge of the wing program, including structures and equipment integration. And if you guys at Cessna find yourself feeling at all inferior watching that gigantic shadow cross the ground, just remind yourself, unlike the A380, any plane Cessna makes can actually land in Wichita. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Chris Dancy of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, who's in Hartford, Connecticut, getting ready for tomorrow's opening of AOPA Expo. And if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.